Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we discuss a new aspect of UFOs and the paranormal, be it ghosts, out-of-body experiences, Bigfoot, or anything like that, anything unexplained. That's what we do. And tonight I have a really exciting guest. Her name is Elaine Kuzmeskis, and she's the author of Connecticut Ghosts. Now, before I introduce our very exciting guest, I just want to give you a little bit of updates and UFO news. Here's a really interesting story, which is coming out of Russia, which is kind of a cryptozoological story. Russian fishermen, apparently, from the Rostov region, caught a weird creature in the Sea of Azov, A-Z-O-V. It was a shark-looking creature, but it was producing strange, squeaky sounds. It was a creature that no one there had ever seen before, and they actually thought it was an alien. And one of them had a cell phone camera and apparently took pictures of it. It had a long body, a long tail. It weighed about 100 kilograms. And, however, what this story has a kind of a tragic ending. The fishermen decided that they would eat the fish. So what they did is they actually just fried it up and cooked it and ate it. So unfortunately, there is no body for people to study. But it just goes to show you that there are a lot of creatures out there that we still don't know about. In London, there's been a UFO video taken over Archway. This just occurred very recently on February 9th, 2007. So that's interesting there. UFOs over England. Speaking of which, there's been tragic news in the UFO community. Graham Conway, a prominent UFO researcher, has passed away. So he apparently fell seriously ill on February 3rd and was taken to the hospital. And he'd been very active and has been actually investigating UFOs for about 60 years. So the field will definitely miss Graham Conway, and we all wish him well. And contrary to the rumors going around, UFO investigator Roy Lake has not died. He's in perfect health. So that's just a rumor going around. I don't know where exactly it came from, but he is doing great. And what else do we got going on here? There was, in Poland just recently, 17 to 18 UFOs spotted. So there is a lot of activity going on all over the world, and so it's just something that we got to keep in mind, that this stuff is not going to go away. But let's just get to our show tonight, because I'm really, really excited about our guest. Her name is Elaine Kuzmeskis. That's K-U-Z-M-E-S-K-U-S. And she is the author of the book Connecticut Ghosts. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about Connecticut Ghosts and a lot of different other stuff, because our guest is actually a medium and ghost researcher. And of course, there are ghosts in Connecticut. Connecticut has a huge number of ghosts. And our guest knows about ghosts firsthand. Not only has she researched Connecticut ghosts, local legends, and haunting cases, but she's also a clairvoyant medium and has been having paranormal experiences her entire life. So tonight, Elaine will discuss some of the more interesting Connecticut ghost stories, as well as various ghostly topics, including mediumship and psychic photography, dream analysis, astral travel, the Akashic Records. We have lots of fun stuff tonight. And Elaine, let me just tell you a little bit about our guest. As I said, she began having psychic experiences at age 4, which have continued into adulthood. In 1972, she was certified by the National Association of Spiritualist Churches as a medium, and during her more than 30 years of mediumship, she has conducted many well-publicized seances, including the 1997 official Houdini seances at the Goodspeed Opera House in Haddam, Connecticut. We'll have to hear about that. And a seance for the cast of the play Blight Spirit at the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut. In 2004, Kuzmeskis published the book Soul Cycles about the ancient science of astrology, and her most recent book, Connecticut Ghosts, has just been released by Schiffer Books. Today, Elaine is the director of and an instructor for the New England School of Metaphysics and is a nationally known medium. Elaine, I want to thank you for coming onto the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And there's so many wonderful topics you mentioned. I'm willing to talk about any of them. That's the joy of being on live radio.
Awesome. I'm interested in all of them. And first of all, I want to thank you for staying up late tonight. I know it's like midnight where you are, past midnight.
Yes, it's midnight, and we are snowed in all day today.
Oh, wow.
I bet it's beautiful out there in California.
Oh, yeah, it's bright and sunny and warm. Well, right now it's dark, but yeah, we've had a beautiful day today.
Oh, good, good.
Unlike most of the United States, which I guess has really cold weather. But at any rate, wow. You know, I read your bio and some of the questions you sent over for, you know, suggestions. This is, you've had some amazing experiences.
Yes, I have. I feel very blessed.
Oh, wow. You know, I just find all of these topics so fascinating. So this started for you. I mean, it's like normal for you, all this paranormal stuff, huh? It just started at
age. Yes, it is. In fact, it wasn't until I was about 7 or 8 that I realized other people weren't having these experiences. So I had to sort of learn to fit in.
Well, what about your brothers and sisters? Did you have any brothers?
Well, I have one sister. I think she's a little intuitive. I have, my husband is very interested in UFOs. He's had some UFO experiences, and well, a lot of clairvoyant. He loves to do meditation, remote viewing types of things. My children, I have 4 children. They all have a little bit, a smidgen of psychic ability. Some of them fight it, though.
Well, it can be scary.
But well, they, you know, they've seen all I've gone through, and, you know, they really want to have normal lives, I guess. Conventional lives, I shall say.
Yeah, I guess there's a Chinese curse. May you have a very interesting life. So let's get started. I mean, age 4, huh? What happened at age 4?
Well, I have to say that like many people in the psychic field, I remember back in my crypto I was 2, which is much further back than the average person. But I do recall vividly at age 4 meeting my Hindu guide, and I just accepted him. As I think many children before the age of 7 do have psychic abilities, and then they're told it doesn't exist, these imaginary playmates, it's your imagination. But anyway, when I was 4, I met my Hindu guide. He was a very typical Hindu, bare-chested, slender-billed. He had a cotton turban, white. And he would constantly tell me things, just little things that that children would be curious about. I remember one time when I was in school, I was in kindergarten, and he would tell me every day what was going to be in my lunchbox before I opened it up.
Oh, wow.
And sure enough, is exactly what he said. Or he would tell me things like, if you want to see the future, and this is, I think, true of anyone who wants to see the future, you can do a technique where you place the person in front of your third eye, and you keep pushing them further and further down the timelines. And as you do, you can see how the changes occur in the future. It takes a little bit of practice, but that was a remote viewing technique that I was taught when I was about 5. And frequently he would tell me things like about auras. He explained to me that we can actually see sound and we can hear color, which I thought was quite interesting. And later with the psychedelic movement, that's exactly what they did with all the strobe lighting and things.
Right. I've actually experienced that. When I hear loud noises, I will see flashes of color.
Sure. Yeah. And I think basically he came in just to help me on my path and to monitor my thoughts. And I think until I was maybe around 8 or 9, I was fairly psychic. And then, as with most children, something will happen that will stop it for a while. And with me, it was the death of my grandmother when I was 10. Because she was very psychic. And I think being in a household with people who were also psychic was very important, because she believed in the spirits. In fact, she's the one that told me, don't worry about ghosts. It's the people that are alive you have to worry about. She was very comfortable with spirits.
I always tell people, why be afraid of ghosts? They're just people.
Well, I think that's a good way of looking at it. And just as any a phenomena. There's positive and negative. Unfortunately, I think our culture, it zeroes in too much on the negative aspect of ghosts.
All right. Now, this guy that came to you, did he appear as an apparition or physically, or how did...
I saw him clairvoyantly with my third eye.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And he would talk to you and give you all this information. How interesting.
He was training me, and I thought that was wonderful. And one of the techniques he taught me was to take my index finger, my right index finger, and put it around my left, and then place both fingers on my third eye to help concentrate.
Right.
And I could never understand why you had to connect the two fingers. And then I learned many years later when I took my psychology classes that we have a right and left side of the brain. And when we connect the fingers at the fingertips, we are actually balancing both sides of the brain.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. So there's a reason for all these techniques and the mudras that you learn about in the Hindu tradition. They're a way of balancing the brain. In the Melchizedek material, they talk about the mudras and interlacing the fingers in order to balance the brain and begin out-of-body experiences.
Well, come to think of it, it's in a lot of different cultures.
It is, yeah.
How very interesting. So what happened as you grew up, and how did you get involved in this?
Well, I actually sort of put things aside for a bit. And I went through a little depression after my grandmother died. Nothing out of the ordinary, but just, you know, I just kind of was more quiet and shy. And then as a teenager, I did teenage things. You know, I dated, went to dances, had fun, went to college, that kind of thing. And when I was in college, all of a sudden, my Hindu guide was back. It was about 18 or 19. And it seems that he loves to come in when I'm near water. So sometimes I'd take a shower, come out of the shower, and I'd see these huge patches of royal blue and Kelly green. And I'd close my eyes, open them, and still be there. And then I'd sense the guide around telling me things.
Wow.
And at that point, since I was in college, I, of course, was taking some psychology courses. And I decided to investigate meditation. And that was probably the best thing I could have done. Because then when I began to meditate on a regular basis, all the psychic stuff started flooding right in as if it had never left me.
Well, I can't recommend to people the meditation. I can't recommend it enough.
Absolutely.
It really does seem to open up all these psychic abilities, not to mention, you know, making you a calmer and more healthy person.
Absolutely. It's good for your blood pressure, and it's also good for your spiritual life. And I can't recommend enough meditating, you know, with protection, surrounding yourself with white light, starting with an affirmation or a religious prayer, either like the Gayatri Mantra or the Lord's Prayer.
Okay.
And, you know, allowing the higher forces to come in and to assist you. You know, it's probably, if there was only one practice I would recommend, it would be meditation.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, that's pretty much what all the enlightened masters say in all their spiritual writings.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one thing they agree upon.
That's right. Absolutely. And meditation is a very safe way to open your psychic abilities, as opposed to some unsafe ways. To me, a very unsafe way of opening your psychic abilities is the Ouija board. It's like opening your front door and saying, anyone come in.
You know,
now, if you live in a nice neighborhood, maybe you have some nice people. But the way things are today, I don't think most of us would do that.
Right. And, of course, the lowest level of the astral plane carries a lot of these people who are still working out issues.
Absolutely. They're still thirsting for alcohol. They're still disturbed.
I can't tell you how many haunting cases I've investigated that started out with something like that, a Ouija board.
Right. So that's one thing I don't recommend is the Ouija board. Although, and there's always exceptions to the rule. There was a group... in Germany, there were 7 servicemen who used a Ouija board. I don't know if you've heard of the cases about maybe 15 years ago, and they did get some very accurate information.
Right, the Gulf Breeze 7.
The Gulf Breeze 7, yeah.
I remember that, yeah. Well, occasionally there are, Jane Roberts and Seth.
Yeah, Jane Roberts also did receive very accurate information through the Ouija board, but I think they're the exceptions to the rule.
Right. Well, I think if you work with the professional medium, it's possible to do, because then you've got all the meditations, the cleansing meditations.
Right.
Right.
But meditation is safe as opposed to the Ouija board, because the entities can only come in, or your guides can only come in on your vibration. So as long as you protect yourself, the lower entities aren't going to harm you during meditation. Any more then they would harm you during a church service. Church services of all kinds are very protected places to meditate.
So is meditation, I mean, you've studied it, is it just emptying your mind out and just relaxing?
There are different techniques. I believe meditation is actually changing the brain waves. You go from the beta waking state to the alpha relaxed state.
Okay.
And if you go deeper, you go into the theta, which is very, very deep. And people who have meditated for many, many years reach the delta, where you have those deep out-of-body experiences.
I was just going to say that, because I've had a bunch of those, actually.
Wonderful.
And you can definitely have the experience of being awake and asleep at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely possible. So I recommend people that want to be mediums to get rid of the Ouija boards, start meditating. And I do think it's important to have a mentor of some type. My mentor came in a very strange way. I was up at Etna, Maine, and with a friend, and I was having breakfast in a coffee shop, and I like to read the local papers. I just get a kick of seeing what's going on. And I was reading the local news, and on the back page, a little ad, it was maybe about 2 inches by maybe an inch deep, and it said the first spiritualist church of Etna, Maine was opening up that afternoon at 2 p.m. And you know how you get this chill, goosebumps?
Right.
I just knew I had to go. I just knew I just had to go. So we went, and the first person I met was a very kindly older woman, and she seemed nice enough, so I said, you know, I've never been to a spiritualist camp. Is there anyone you would recommend as a medium? And this is back in 1969 when mediumship was not as well known. And she says, well, if you want an honest reading, go see my husband, Reverend Bill Ellis. And I did. And for $5, Reverend Bill gave me the most incredible reading. He told me the colors in my aura, which were golden yellow. And he described my grandmother to me. He described what I would be doing. And he went on and on and on. And he was so accurate, I had to come back the next week, even though it was kind of a long ride. So the next time I went, he told me even more material. He told me he had a guide from the seventh plane and all kinds of things that he felt would be coming into my life. And at the very end, as I was leaving, he said, you know, Elaine, he said, someday you'll be doing this work. And I kind of brought up coming from Boston to be very polite. So I didn't say a word, but I thought, my goodness, I bet he says this to everyone. And he looked me right in the eye and he says, I know you don't believe me, but someday you will.
Wow.
And that was, and about, oh, maybe about 14 years later, I met Reverend Bill Ellis, and I was a professional medium. I was serving the Temple Heights Spiritualist Church, and I was doing the services and the mediumship for them for the week. And in came Reverend Bill to conduct a seance. And I told him that story. We had the best laugh. I said, you told me, but I didn't believe you. But he was a great guy, and he stuck to his story. He was a true medium. Should deliver the message without any embellishment.
Right.
Because you are the messenger. Many times when I do readings for people, I hear spirits say a word like Georgie, and I'm tempted to say, well, he's here, but they didn't say it was a man. It might be a woman. One time I gave a reading for a man, and I said, you know, Georgie's here, and the man just dissolved in tears. His late wife, who had died about 3 months before, her name was Georgie.
Oh.
I was the first person that came rushing in to say hello to him.
Wow.
And that was, of course, was very evidential for him.
Right, right.
Yeah, I always like to give good evidence. One of the hardest readings I ever had to do was a friend of mine. His name was Randy. And his wife, Sharon, died very suddenly. It was maybe about 3 months she was ill. And they didn't know what the disease was, and then she passed away. Well, I had met Anna, his wife socially about 2 years before Sharon. And so I said to Randy when he asked for a reading, I said, you know, I have to tell you, I have met Sharon. I know what she looks like. So the reading might not be that evidential. Would you like me to recommend another meeting? He goes, no, Elaine, I'd like to come to you. So I said, okay. And he came in. I gave him a reading. Usually people come to my office in Suffield, and I put the tape recorder on, and I go into a light trance, and I bring the spirits through. And, of course, Sharon did come through, and she brought through a lot of messages. And we answered his questions. And then when he went home, he called me back immediately. He said, Elaine, you won't believe what happened. He said, when you mentioned Sharon, there was a human heartbeat on the tape.
Oh.
And he said, and that stayed for about 15 minutes. Even when you turn the tape over and continue, as long as Sharon was there, there was the human heartbeat.
Wow.
So that was the evidence I was trying to give him.
Wow.
And it does show the spirit will help, will come through as much as they can.
So
and Sharon was a wonderful woman. She was a theosophist, so she was very well versed in spiritual matters.
Right. Well, how did you become a medium? I mean,
well, after I met Reverend Bell and I had my reading, I had just graduated from college with a degree in English. I was planning to be an English teacher. And there weren't too many jobs for English teachers, and so I substituted in the Boston Public Schools a bit, and I worked as a waitress part-time. And I had picked up some literature as I left the camp, and I thought, well, maybe I should look into this a little bit. And I noticed, I was living in Brookline, Massachusetts, that there was a spiritualist development circle in Brookline, Massachusetts, about 2 miles from my apartment.
2 miles.
And it was really strange. And so I called up, and the person I spoke to became a very dear friend. It was Reverend Kenneth Gustin. And he said, yes, we do have a developmental circle, and I would suggest that you come a couple of times and see if you like it, if it's for you. And so I went, and he was in a beautiful apartment in the Back Bay, which was where this circle was held, and there were 40 people. The most impressive group of people I have ever met. We had two MIT professors. We had a rabbi. We had a writer. We had several people that were wonderful mediums and detectives. And
wow.
It was just the most interesting group of people.
So not what
I would have stayed just for the people.
Is that what you expected?
They were so much fun to be with.
And some of
them were just ordinary people. We had a retiree named Michael, who contacted the men who had died on the Thresher, the submarine that was sunk.
Oh, that's right.
And he would get messages from these men. And they would say over and over and go that it was sabotage, that the Russians had got a hold of our plans and they had sabotaged the Thresher. So we got all kinds of interesting things. Our MIT professor worked at MIT for like maybe 25 years, and he said, 25 years before the first man walked on the moon, he was getting together with the professors to design some of the things they would need. And a lot of people were very skeptical. This is back in the 1940s. And he said, he really believed in the space program. He said, in 25 years, I will have a rock from the moon on my desk.
Wow.
And one of the astronauts who had walked on the moon came to MIT and presented him with rocks on the moon. Wasn't that a great story?
That's amazing.
And of course, he was quite psychic, but I think it was just a great story. He knew that it was going to work. The space program would work.
Wow.
But to answer your question, I was in a spiritualist development circle for 3 years, and we met every Friday night. And our leader, who was Reverend Gladys Customs, was a professional medium with probably about 30 years' experience at that time. And she conducted the session in trance. She would go into trance. And her guide, the professor, would come through, and he would give lessons and monitor us as we went into a deep meditation state. And all kinds of phenomena would take place. Sometimes the whole room would fill with violets, and everyone would smell it.
Oh, wow.
Or sometimes there'd be lights dancing in the center of the room, and the majority of people would see them. And then those who were more advanced would, of course, identify spirits and give messages. And, about 2 hours of that is quite a lot of meditation. And I used to feel the spirits playing with my third eye and the back of my neck, like adjusting me esoterically. And as I became, at first I didn't say too much, I more or less listened. But as I became a second-year student, I was giving messages too. And in the spiritualist tradition, once you're ready, you become what's called a platform medium. So about 1970, I started working in the Spiritualist Church at Onset, giving messages from the platform to people. And in 1972, I took the test from the National Association of Spiritualist Churches and was certified as a medium.
Wow.
And I'm glad I had formal training. I think it's important. Unfortunately, mediumship is a field that's very wide open. And there's many people who are self-proclaimed psychics or clairvoyants and mediums. And they really have no credibility because nobody's ever tested them to see if they really can do the work.
And I honestly didn't know that there was places you could get formal training.
Well, the Spiritualist Churches is one of them. We have a New England School of Metaphysics here in Connecticut, and I now train mediums myself. I dedicated the school to mediumship training. There's the Arthur Findlay College in England, which has an excellent program. There's also Lilydale Assembly in upstate New York.
Right, Lilydale.
Nashville, they do training. And they have a fabulous program in Camp Chesterfield, Indiana.
So can anyone become a medium, or do you have to have, like, a natural ability?
I think it's like musical ability. Some of us will only play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Whereas other people can be like a Mozart or Leonard Bernstein.
You know, I think
we all have some psychic ability. To be a professional medium, I do believe you have to have that little extra dose of psychic ability.
I think that's a very good analogy, actually. Because I think pretty much anyone can have a psychic experience if they work at it.
Absolutely.
So.
And it's part of our heritage. It really is.
Right. And we all have spirit guides, right?
Yes. Everyone absolutely has a spirit guide. This I feel very strongly about. And some of us, we usually start with our personal guide. Like my personal guide was the Hindu that came in. But as I developed and I worked in the field, new people would come in. And they came in different ways. One of my guides came in about the 1980s, just shortly before I got the writing bug and decided to do some writing. It was about 1982, I think. And I began having dreams about the writer Jack Kerouac.
Oh.
And he would talk to me and tell me things in the dreams. But he would also come in different appearances, and often he would come dressed as, I would say, like a biblical person with biblical dress. And he told me that he had been in a scene, and that he had also believed in Edgar Cayce as Jack Kerouac. He encouraged me in my writing, and he would go on and tell me about his past life as in a scene, and that we had known each other. We had been writers together. And I thought this was fine, but I thought, how am I ever going to check this out? I thought, it's fine. I'm happy he's here, and I believed it. And a few years later, a woman by the name of Carolyn Cassidy wrote a book, Off the Road, about her life with Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg and her husband, Neil Cassidy. And so I took the book out of the Kett Memorial Library in Suffield, Connecticut, and I read it because I just knew there was something in that book that was going to help me. And sure enough, I got to one of the later chapters, and she talked about how Jack Kerouac believed in Edgar Cayce. She had read a lot of the Edgar Cayce material, and that she and her husband had introduced him to that material, and that he also felt strongly that a strong tie with the Essenes as well.
Wow.
So I thought that was at least verification, you know. And I think it's important to verify what's coming through. But as I continued my work, sometimes spirit doctors would come in. And I'm talking medical doctors, and would come in with health issues or things of that direction. And sometimes their language would be archaic. If they were a doctor in the 1800s, their language would sound like the 1800s.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Right. For example, once I had bronchitis, and my spirit doctor said, you know, you need an expectorant. I said, what's that? Because I went to the pharmacy. They told me what it was, but he was using the language that he was used to.
Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Elaine Kuzmeskis, author of Connecticut Ghosts, which has just been released by Schiffer Books. Now, Elaine, do you have a website or a...
Yes, I do. It's New England School of Metaphysics, all one word, .citymax, one word, .com.
Okay, New England School of Metaphysics.
Dot
citymax?
Mm-hmm. Dot com.
So that's CITYNAX?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And that you have more information
yes,
there?
Yeah, there's information about the books, classes, there's information my biography, and you can contact me. Or people can contact me by simply typing in E Kuzmeskis, KUZMESKUS, at AOL.com.
Okay, so that's your last name, Kuzmeskis, with your first initial, E. Kuzmeskis, at AOL.com.
That's correct.
Okay, cool.
if readers are contacting me, please put Preston Show or something, so because I get about 200 emails a day.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure you do get a lot. So if you put a little heading that lets me know it's the radio show, I will answer it.
Okay, yeah, that's good advice. Definitely, there's lots of email. All right, so do people have more than one spirit guide?
Yes, they do, and they come sometimes on a PRN or an as-needed basis. So, you know, I really think that one thing I've learned about mediumship is it's not about the life after death. It's about the life we live here and now. Absolutely. This is where we're supposed to be, in the now. And our guides come in to help us live a better life in the here and now, which is important. So if you're interested in art, you may attract an artistic guide. There's some wonderful spirit artists that are, you know, alive and well today. Reverend Rita Berkowitz is a friend of mine from Quincy, Massachusetts. She has her guides come in, and they show her people on the other side, and she actually sketches their pictures, which is quite interesting. She's quite accurate. In Connecticut Ghost, I dedicated it to my grandparents, and you can see a picture of my grandparents, Harry and Catherine Brickett, in the dedication. But later on in the book, there's a picture of my grandfather that Rita Berkowitz did, and it looks just like him. And she sketched that within 20 minutes of me, in a 20-minute session, and she had never met me before.
Uh-huh.
And that's a wonderful demonstration. So spirit artists have come through, and they work from the other side with mediums. We also have people that are very much involved, like Edgar Cayce, in clairvoyant and psychic diagnosis. And the late Edgar Cayce had many, many guides that came in, and his main guide was called The Source, which gave information on health and past lives and also astrology.
So if we all have guides, I mean, I totally believe we do.
Mm-hmm.
How can people get in touch with them or connect?
Well, I think the easiest way is through meditation.
Right.
The second way, which I personally have found very powerful, is through dreams. You know, when we dream, we are all having an out-of-body experience. The thing is, most people don't remember it, so the trick is to try to remember your dreams. And you want to remember especially those very clear dreams, or what we call lucid dreams, because those are the dreams where you can meet your guides or receive information that's important to your future.
Right.
And I also feel that we can use mediums to help us connect with their guides. I was very fortunate that not only did my teacher Gladys Custance tell me my guides very early on, and I was also able to see some of my guides, I also was able to receive pictures of my guides through Reverend Hoyt Robinette's spirit cards, which is an incredible form of psychic phenomena, where he actually places cards in, these are 3x5 index cards, in a cobra basket, and places the basket on the altar of the church, or when he comes to our house, he puts it on the top of our piano so everyone can see it. And the spirits can actually write or draw on these cards.
Wow.
It's probably very, very few people have this particular gift, but I was fortunate to receive the names of my guides on the back of the card. And I always like to test things because I'm a rational person. I have a master's degree in counseling. I've had a lot of academic training. So I had about 12 cards from Reverend Hoyt, and one of the cards my husband received, it had on the back of it Ashtar. And, you know, he said, "Who's Ashtar?" And we were driving home. I said, "Ron, it's the Ashtar Command. That's the UFO group." And the next card he got the name, the Ashtar Command, underlined triple. They were in the car when I told him that. And then he was blessed to have an actual picture of Ashtar materialize on the card.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard of actually slate writing back in the 1850s.
It was absolutely. Much it's alive and well in today. But it's rare. Cam Chesterfield in Indiana does more of the physical mediumship, and Louis Dale Assembly in New York State does more of the mental mediumship.
Wow.
Those are our two main spiritualist camps.
So tell us about a little bit about Connecticut Ghosts and what's in the book.
Love to. When I started Connecticut Ghosts, I started with an open mind, and I, of course, I did my research. I did the internet research. I read books. I went to the Connecticut State Library and looked up, you know, witches in Connecticut and ghosts during Victorian Hartford and did all that kind of stuff. And then I decided to, it was time to do my field research. So I made a list of 31 historic sites in the state of Connecticut.
Wow.
And I decided to go to four a month, like, you know, like maybe two a week, every other week. And I thought, this way I'll get them done in probably about 6 months. So the first place I went to was the old Newgate Prison, which is about 10 miles from my house at East Granby. And I went there with my husband, and we brought our video camera, and we brought a regular camera. And we went, we had to wait a bit for the tour guide to take us down. And while we're waiting there, I decided, well, I might as well use my mediumship, too.
Right.
So I'm tuning in. It was a beautiful June day. The temperature was just about perfect, 85. And I'm sitting there, and I'm meditating and tuning in.
Now, how do you tune in?
And all of a sudden, I felt happy. And I could hear music, really kind of raucous music playing. And then the next thing, I could see little children running around. I said, wow, this is a strange thing. Maybe I'm not psychic today. So when the tour guide came to bring us down to the Newgate Prison Mines, I said, has this ever been used for anything beside a prison? And he goes, yes, Elaine. In the 1920s, this was a speakeasy. In fact, you were sitting just about where the door to the speakeasy was, and that was all that raucous music I was hearing.
Now, what's a speakeasy?
Well, during the 1920s, when we had prohibition, people would come from Hartford into East Granby to this particular tavern that still served liquor under the table. So it was kind of a shady place.
I see.
And then in the 1940s, he said it had been used as a children's zoo, and that was little children I could see running around. So I said, oh, I guess I'm on to something. And we went down to the copper mines. And the copper mines were used during colonial times for prisoners. They were given work duty there, which actually wasn't too bad because the copper mines were warmer in the winter than the above temperature, and they stayed fairly cool in the summer. But it was hard work. And we went down there, and we had the video camera, and we could see these orbs, and one of the orbs started chasing my husband. It's on video. It was funny. So, I mean, that was kind of an introduction to that, and I described that in the book. And then we went over to the Mark Twain House. And Mark Twain, I feel, is our most prestigious Connecticut writer, probably one of our most beloved humorists. And he loved to poke fun at mediums. He got kind of a kick out of that.
He did. He had a lot of psychic experiences
as
well.
He did, but he was kind of on the borderline with it. I think later in life, when his daughter Jean died, his psychic increased. But anyway, I went, and I, of course, in a lot of these historic buildings, you can't take pictures inside. But I went anyway, and I said, I can use my mediumship, and I can see what I pick up. So we went to the front door, and we walked in, and he has this huge foyer with a round settee in the circle in the middle. Beautiful, beautiful. It has Tiffany glass and just beautiful in its day and age. And as I walked in, I had a blink because I saw three spirits sitting in the entryway. And they looked right at me as if to say, we know why you're here. The first was Mrs. Leary, who had been the Mark Twain's maid. Then his daughter Susie was there. And she had actually died of meningitis in that house, about 21 or 22. And next to her was her mother, Olivia Clements, who was Mark Twain's wife. And I thought later, you know, these are the three ladies that loved that house the most. Mrs. Twain, it had been the only home she'd really had. Because after her daughter Susie died, the Twains went to Europe. And they lived in hotels and they never really had a formal home like they had in Connecticut.
Huh.
And, of course, this is the most the home that Susie had lived in the most of her life and where she had died. And their maid, Mrs. Leary, also loved the home very much. And then I could see them just looking at me as if to say, welcome, we know why you're here, and we'll try to help you. So I thought that was a very positive experience. I had another very positive mediumship experience with the Hillstead Museum. The Hillstead Museum is in Farmington, Connecticut. It was the home that was built by Theodate Pope Riddle for her parents, and later Theodate Pope Riddle lived there with her husband. It's a beautiful, stately colonial mansion, beautiful acreage of gardens. The house is filled with Manets, Monets, beautiful paintings, and just exquisite. And so I decided that might be a good place to visit because of its historic value.
Sure, yeah.
And Theodate Pope Riddle was an unusual woman. She was the first woman architect in the state of Connecticut at the turn of the century. She was the designer and patroness of Avon O. Boys School in Avon, Connecticut. And she had also had a very strong interest in parapsychology. Although I didn't know that at the time, I knew that she had some interest, but I didn't know how strong it was. Because several years before, they'd invited me to do some psychic work at the house, but I had to decline at the time. In any event, I called the curator, Melanie Bordeaux, and left a message saying I would like to do some research in the house. And I went out to my front porch and had an iced tea, and just sitting there relaxing, and I heard the most genteel voice come up behind me and whisper in my ear, "Your wish will be granted." And about 5 seconds later, the phone rang, and it was Melanie saying that I could come on a Monday and do research in the home.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was Theodate Pope Riddle. And then when I did research, I realized she was genuinely interested in parapsychology. She had funded William James's research, partly funded the research at Harvard University, that he did on the medium Lenore Piper back at the turn of the century. And Mrs. Piper was an incredibly excellent medium. She was like the Sylvia Brown of her day.
Right.
And Harvard University studied her for several years with very, very good results. They would even hire detectives to follow her around to see if she was getting information on people. And of course, she never did. She was a medium. So they found her to be impeccable. But Theodate Pope Riddle gave money for that research and helped with it. And she also was very interested in reading on the subject. When I went to her library, it had rows and rows of books on parapsychology, which I was very familiar with the titles. So we took some psychic photos. I brought my EMF meter with me, and I got around to 3 or 4 in the library. And then we went upstairs, and I took some pictures on the second floor landing. And the only really psychic phenomenon I got was when I took a picture of Theodate Pope Riddle's portrait, which was outside her bedroom. I did get a mist over it, and that is in the book, Connecticut Ghosts. But I wasn't really satisfied. I felt I could have done more, so I made an appointment to go back 2 months later. And this time I brought one of our students with us, and I brought water. I think water is very helpful when you're doing ghost sightings. I always bring an open container of water.
Why would that be, do you think?
Because it's a conduit. Water, if there's some spirit energy, can intensify it, but it has to be open.
Okay.
You can't bring a bottle of Poland Springs. That's not going to do it. You know, if you have it, pour it in a cup and have it open, because the water does really mix with the atmosphere in such a way to intensify spiritual energy.
Okay.
And an EMF meter is wonderful. That's an electromagnetic field meter, because it can give you electromagnetic readings. And that can be a good way. It's like playing hot and cold. You just take the meter through a room and you find where the most electromagnetic energy is. Of course, you have to rule out obvious things like, you know, electrical outlets or electronic things that might set the meter off. But assuming there's no interference, there has to be something causing that change in the meter.
Mm-hmm.
So this time I was really determined to get some phenomena, see what was going on. And the meter, again, I got 2s and 3s, nothing spectacular. But, you know, the night before I was thinking about it, and I had the most unusual dream. I dreamt that I was in Hartford, and across the street, on the other side of the street, was William James, the psychologist and psychic researcher. And he was talking to me from the other side. I think that dream is very good metaphorically, because obviously he was on the other side, and he was communicating. And then the next day I went to Theodate Pope Riddle's Hillstead Mansion. And when I was there, nothing spectacular, but I went into her office, which had originally been her father's office, but then became her office. And I started using the meter, and all of a sudden, as I went to the desk, it got to be like an 8. And as I went to a picture on the desk, it went to a 10, which is as high as it can go. And it was, stayed there. It wasn't like it was just a 10 that went down. It stayed.
Did you feel it physically?
Oh, absolutely. I could. I felt something was in that picture they wanted me to know about. So I asked the our guide, who was the curator, and I said, who's this a picture of? And she said, this is a picture of Henry James, who was a very good friend of Theodate Pope Riddle's. And I said, was he related to William James? She says, yes, they were brothers. And then I realized that William James had been guiding the research for me and trying to help me with it. And so I did more reading. I felt I was on to something. And I read several biographies of Theodate Pope Riddle. And it turns out that she was so interested in parapsychology, she had actually wanted to start a parapsychology foundation similar to the British Society for Psychical Research in Hartford. And she had taken her maid and was going over to England to research this. But you know the ship she took was the Lusitania?
Oh, no.
That was the ship that was torpedoed by the Germans.
Sure, yeah.
And, of course, she and everybody on the ship went down. But it was interesting. She was the very last passenger to be rescued. And I like to think that her spirit guides insisted the rescuers stay there till they got her. And the only reason she was saved is, this is when the women wore the very heavy, long petticoats and skirts. One of the oars from the lifeboats had actually shimmied up her skirt and acted like a buoy and kept her afloat for several hours. And it was a strange thing, but it saved her life. And it took her several months to recuperate, and I think that put the kibosh on starting a parapsychology foundation in Hartford.
Wow.
But I think she was very, very sincere. She was genuine. And as a young girl, she had had an astral travel experience.
How interesting.
The way many of us do by looking in a mirror.
Right, right.
The mirror is like a portal to the other side. And I think she was like 9 or 10, and she was looking at a mirror at her reflection. And the next thing you knew, she had an out-of-body experience. She left her body and was looking down. So she was a bit psychic herself.
It's interesting you say that, because I've had many out-of-body experiences, and I often end up in front of a mirror.
Yes, and like a portal. Some of my first psychic experiences clairvoyantly took place in a mirror. In fact, it was interesting when I did the Houdini seance back in 1997. I was a little reluctant to do it, to be honest with you. I'll tell you why, because Houdini has been dead for 71 years at that time. And I thought, you know, what are really the chances of him coming back? I mean, let's be reasonable.
Right.
And I said that to the people that invited me. And I said, I don't know if I can honestly bring him through because he's been there a long time. You know, I don't want to say I'm going to do something I can't. And they said, no, that's okay. We just want to do the seance. And I said, well, I'll think about it. And I was just about to call because I thought about it for a week. And I thought, that's long enough. I really should call and just tell him I'm not going to do it. And maybe suggest some other people for them. And I was combing my hair in the mirror, and all of a sudden, I had a very strong experience. I heard a male voice say, Houdini has a message for you. And I just knew it was Arthur Ford. Reverend Arthur Ford had been a friend of my teachers, Gladys and Kenneth Custis, and they always spoke very highly of him. And he was the person who had done the first Houdini seance. After Houdini died, I just knew it. And then I had other experiences where Arthur Ford came through, including some spirit card experiences.
Wow.
And I said, well, if Arthur Ford feels I can do this seance, I'm going to do it. So I called him back, and I said I would do it. And it's just so interesting, you know. And the seance itself was quite interesting. I think there were only two people there that really were sincere in trying to bring Houdini through. One was myself, and the other was the assistant medium, Barbara Hardy Dryden, who really did try very hard. I personally think Houdini came through. He came through the way most spirits come through evidential messages. You know, he didn't come through as an apparition or a voice in the wilderness. When I did the readings, we had 12 people around the seance table, which included Sydney Radar, who's the director of the Houdini Museum and would also organize the seance. Myself, an assistant medium, Barbara, and several people who had either written books about Houdini or involved in Houdini's life in one way or the other. The great-granddaughter, I believe, of Marjorie Crandon, who was one of the mediums that Houdini had actually debunked, I think quite unfortunately, was there as well. So we had a good mix. And as I usually do, I did a demonstration for the audience. And I did about 20 readings. There were about 500 people at the Goodspeed Opera House. And I picked about 20 people at random, and I read their aura. I gave them the names of their spirit loved ones, told them a little bit about themselves. And I don't think one person said that anything I said was not true. I think they all agree. It was like one of my most remarkable seances, because I think I had about a 98%.
Wow.
Which is, I have to admit, I'm usually about 85%, like most mediums.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, only God is 100%, so I thought that was good. 98%, 95% was, I thought was much higher than I usually
had. Outstanding, yeah.
And I could feel when I was doing this, like there were a lot of spirit mediums behind me. I'm talking maybe 15 or 20 people I knew who had been professional mediums who had died. I could feel them behind me, helping me and pulling the energy up and keeping the energy high and saying, go ahead, we're going to do it. So that part, I felt, went very well. And then at midnight, exactly, we, on stage, we formed the circle, and I conducted it and called upon Houdini to come through. And then I started giving messages. And when I came to Timothy Gluon, who was the actor that played Harry Houdini, I said, you know, Houdini's here, and he says he's been around you. And that you're not really a magician, but you're trying very hard, and then he's been trying to help you with the tricks. And the play, by the way, was Metamorphosis, which was named after one of Houdini's great tricks. And he said, you know, Timothy, I said, you know, Houdini's telling me that about a few weeks ago you injured your shoulder and you were not planning to go on. And you could feel Houdini behind you telling you to go on. And Timothy Gluon acknowledged that he had injured his shoulder about 2 weeks ago, and he had felt somebody urging him to go on.
Wow.
And that he was not, in fact, a professional magician. So I thought that was evidential. And that's basically what a medium will do. They will give you some form of evidence, either describing the spirit, giving a message that nobody would know but you,
right.
Details in the future that may come up.
No, are all hauntings caused by, like, active spirits? Or is there such a thing as, like, a residual haunting?
I believe both. My personal feeling is most hauntings are caused by very active spirits who are not too happy. I'll give you an example of this. I had a friend, Florence. Florence lived in Arlington, Massachusetts, in a beautiful old 1920s type house, and she loved it. But every time she would go into the pantry, she would get physically ill. She would get very afraid. She would get very anxious. So she did some research, and she found out that the man who had built the house was an architect, and that he had committed suicide in the pantry.
Oh.
He had shot himself. So she started praying for him and did her best, but he still wouldn't go away. He was such an unhappy spirit. He was really stuck. And finally, one day, about 11 o'clock in the evening, Florence was getting ready for bed, and he came out, and he actually pushed her down the stairs, and she had a concussion. Fortunately, she was okay, but she was hopping mad at that point. She said, he has got to go. This is it. So she was a member of our Friday night psychic development circle in Brookline, Mass. And Reverend Kenneth Custance and Reverend Gladys Custance agreed to go to her home and do an exorcism. And they brought holy water. They went through every single inch of that house, cleaning it out, and he did go away. And, of course, they did psychic rescue work. They actually contacted the spirit. They told him he was dead, that it was no longer his home, that he needed to go to the light, and they professionally helped him to make a transition out of the house.
Wow.
And that's why I say, you know, when you talk about ghosts, they are very active. It's not a subtle thing.
Right.
And most of the ghosts I met are actually friendly, but You know, if I had a negative spirit, I wouldn't hesitate to tell them to go to the light. In fact, chapter 12 of my book is just on psychic protection, ways that you can protect yourself. Because, you know, it's important to know there is both good and bad, and knowing how to handle it is very important. For example, most people that work with energy would recommend smudging or clearing your body of negative energy.
Right.
Surrounding yourself with white light. Another good thing is just imagine a shower of white light. And a great way to do it is to sit under a full moon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've done that with articles. Like I had a crystal ball my husband bought me, and it's been in a store. It's collected all kinds of energy. So before I use it, I decided to take it and put it under the moonlight to cleanse it. So at the time, the kids had a big trampoline in the backyard. So I put it on the middle of the trampoline. And Ron said, Elaine, that's not good. It could roll off. So then I got some paper plates, and I got some towels, and I wrapped it around so there was no way that ball could roll off. And I left it under the moonlight. Well, Spirit had other ideas. When I got up in the morning, there was the ball had not only run off the trampoline, but it actually ended up in front of my office window.
Huh.
Funniest thing. So if Spirit wants to move something, they'll move it.
So how are spirits able to move physical objects if they're not physical?
That's called psychokinesis. And I've had many examples of psychokinesis in my life. In fact, one of the most recent ones, after Ron began to have some UFO experiences, he was in the living room about 11 o'clock at night watching TV. And we have a very heavy coffee table. It must weigh about 60 pounds.
Right.
It actually levitated.
Wow.
And then went down. I've been at trumpet seances where I've seen the trumpet levitate, which is a very wonderful form of physical mediumship.
Right. I just actually wrote a book about levitation.
Great. Have you been to a trumpet seance?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
But I've definitely read about them.
You've got to go. You have to go. They're incredible.
I can only imagine.
Yes, they are incredible things to go to. At Camp Chesterfield, there are several trumpet mediums, so I've been to several there. And Reverend Hoyt Robinette does trumpet seances. I was at one of his in July of 2000. And,
I had no idea this stuff was all still going on.
It's a very rare but a real form of mediumship, physical mediumship. And I've done a lot of research on it. And, in fact, my next book is going to be on physical mediumship.
I was just going to ask you what...
Yeah,
what,
for a ship of publications, of course.
Very, very interesting. Well, we have just about a couple of minutes.
Yes.
So we've covered a lot of stuff. But is there anything else that you feel like people should know or you want to share?
Well, I think they should, as far as ghosts go, I think they should know a couple of things. And that is, one, as long as you are spiritually protected, there's nothing to be afraid of. And that sometimes ghosts are looking for information just as we're looking for information. I also would leave the thought with them that the two things that I felt helped me the most as a medium were meditation and keeping a dream journal. I found those two things helped me the most to get in touch with the inner side of life and to develop a rapport with the spirit world.
Right.
And those are things anybody can do.
Right. Well, I'm doing the right things and doing both of those.
Oh, good for you. And I also gained a lot from reading from the Edgar Cayce material, too. The two books I used to read the most when I was developing mediumship, one was The Sleeping Prophet by Jeff Stern, which is the biography of Edgar Cayce, and the other was Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda, which is a wonderful book and also gives some good suggestions on meditation.
Right, right. I've read that book. It's a very, very large one.
Oh, it's wonderful. And, you know, I've reread it several times, and every time I get something different because I've changed a bit.
Right, I know. Oh, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, Elaine, you have been an amazing guest. You're an amazing person.
Oh, well, thank you, Preston.
I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
It's wonderful to do live radio. It gives us a chance to talk and kind of dialogue a bit.
Right, right. So,
yeah.
So people can get your book, Connecticut Ghosts,
yes.
at on the Schiffer Books website, which
absolutely.
Is schifferbooks.com,
mm-hmm.
or on Amazon.com?
Yes, on Amazon also.
And you have a website? You want to say that again?
It's New England School of Metaphysics. CityMax.com.
Okay, New England School of Metaphysics. CityMax.com, and your email is E. Kuzmeskus.
Yeah, E. K. U. Z. M. E. S. K. U. S. at AOL.com.
Okay, and remember, if you're going to contact her, mention the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Mention Presta, so I will answer the email.
All right, thank you, Elaine. I want to thank you again for coming on the show. Your book, Connecticut Ghosts, sounds very interesting, and boy, the experiences you've had.
Oh, thank you. And I have to recommend also your book. As I said, I was just reading UFOs Over California. What a fabulous job of research you did.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And that's by Schiffer Books also. So
all right, yeah.
We have to recommend that.
They're both published by Schiffer Books.
That's right, yeah.
All right, well, that's been our show tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. My name is Preston Bennett, and our guest tonight has been Elaine Kuzmeskus, author of Connecticut Ghosts. I recommend all of you go straight out and buy this book. It's incredible. And otherwise, have a wonderful evening, and I hope you can join me next week when our guest is Helen Littrell, and we'll be talking about her book, Rachel's Eyes, an experience with a human-alien hybrid. Until then, have a wonderful evening.